Support for this podcast comes from Pittsburgh Theological Seminary and their Doctor of Ministry program. The Risking Faithfully Disruption is Revelation and Resurrection Doctor of Ministry cohort at Pittsburgh Theological Seminary is more than a degree program. Together, this cohort will form Fugitive Space, welcoming radical reimagination of church and world. Offered in partnership with the Ministry Collaborative, this cohort begins in February 2021. Financial aid and scholarships are available for those who qualify. Visit www.pts.edu/DMIN. Welcome to AIJCast, a podcast featuring conversations and performances at the intersection of art, inspiration, and justice. I'm your host, Marthame Sanders. On this episode, part one of our conversation with Aisha Saeed. Aisha is a New York Times best-selling author, and she spoke with us from her home here in Atlanta. Aisha Saeed, welcome to AIJCast.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here.
Let's talk about your art. Your art is writing. And I'm curious, what is it about writing for you? Why do you think writing appeals to you so much? Why is it such an effective avenue for you? What is it about writing in general that you think is such an effective medium for expression?
I've been writing for as long as I can remember. I've been writing since I was a kid, telling stories, writing them in my spiral notebooks. It's hard to know exactly why, but I do know that it's through writing that I make sense of the world. So anytime there's something, ever since I was a child, if there was something confusing or something I didn't understand or an emotion I was going through, it was through sitting down, putting it on paper that I was able to suss out exactly why I was feeling what I was feeling, what to do about something. It's just always been the way that I make sense of things. And so I guess that's led itself into storytelling as well.
I wonder if you can point to what it was that, if there's maybe some early influence on that or something that where you realized, oh, if I pick up a, you know, a pencil and put it on paper, it starts to make sense of the world.
It's hard to pinpoint, but I do think that one thing that has been a factor in me making that connection is reading. I was reading since I was 3 years old. My parents took me to the library every weekend. I would get as many books as I could possibly get. And reading books also helped me understand the world too.
Yeah.
And so I think those were both connected. I could read about loneliness in a book and feel seen in my own loneliness if I was feeling lonely in a moment. I could experience things I'd never seen before. And I think that also helped me because I saw that books can help me unravel my thoughts and make me feel connected. So perhaps me writing my own thoughts down could also help with a connection.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I love it. Then there's also this interesting turn in there, right? Of books are something that are helping me make sense of the world, or I'm resonating with something that an author is saying. There's a switch that then says, and so I can do that too. I cannot just be the recipient of it. I can be the giver of that.
I've always seen myself in stories in some capacity, whether it be, oh, I can relate to that particular emotion or that particular feeling or that circumstance. But I never saw anybody that looked like me in books growing up.
Meaning what?
Meaning that I never saw a Muslim character in books or media. I never saw a Pakistani or South Asian character. When I did, there were some times that I did in media in general, like in movies or TV shows. And it was always stereotypical, negative, demeaning. When it comes to representation, that kind of representation, you may as well not have any because it actually makes your life worse to have bad representation. So I grew up writing stories, but I never wrote stories featuring characters that look like me. I never wrote about brown kids. I never wrote about Muslim kids because I never saw it. It never occurred to me.
There's no model for it.
Yeah. There was no model for it. And it wasn't until I was in college, I was doing my master's in education, and there was a book on one of my professor's desk. It was called Shabanu, Daughter of the Wind. It was written by a woman named Suzanne Staples, and it had a picture of a Pakistani girl on the cover. She looked nothing like me. Her life was totally different. She was a nomad in like the nomadic desert areas of Pakistan. Right. So we shared nothing in common. And yet I couldn't stop looking at this picture. Like, there's a girl, she's Muslim. There's a story about her. It's been published and it won a Newbery honor. Mm. It was a children's book. And that was the first time I thought, wait a minute. So I can tell my own stories. I can write about myself. But it wasn't until I read Jhumpa Lahiri's Interpreter of Maladies. I was a bookseller while I was in college. I worked at Borders Books and Music. May it rest in peace. And I was there when that book went on sale. And I watched people flocking to it, getting it, reading it. And that was a book by a South Asian woman about South Asian characters. And it was selling. And I realized, wow, so I can write stories that feature Muslim people. I can write stories that feature brown people. Maybe there are stories for me to tell that feature and center those characters. So it took a long time. I loved writing for so long, for my entire life, but it wasn't until I was an adult that I realized that maybe I could write stories where I felt seen.
That's so incredibly powerful. I think, you know, somebody who embodies the identities that I embody of cishet, white dude, it's stuff that I never have to wrestle with. It's stuff that I've never faced. I've always been represented in media. I've always been overrepresented in media. And to recognize how critical that is, I mean, there's always this kind of dismissive thing of, oh, it's just like a Apu in The Simpsons. It's just a character. Get over it. But if that's the only character you see, and it's a negative character and it's a comedic character, it has this huge impact on folk.
Yeah, absolutely. Apu didn't just live on a TV screen.
Right.
He lived in my classrooms. He haunted me in the hallways. People used that caricature to taunt me, to taunt other people who look like me. And so media can often be dismissed like, oh, come on, it's just a show. Have a sense of humor. But it's not funny to the people who that character is weaponized against.
That's a good word. Yeah, it's the weaponization of it that's particularly harmful. Yeah. And if there's no competing image, there's nothing to prevent the weaponization of it, right? There's nothing where you can say, oh, yeah, but there's also this character. Mm-hmm. Speaking of your books and the work you've been doing, particularly as an adult and writing books that feature people that look like you and that have life experiences like you, I would love to dig into some of your books that you have written. And I would love to start with Written in the Stars, 2015. Give us a taste of the book, but also tell us about the inspiration for it.
So Written in the Stars was my debut book, and it's a young adult novel about a girl named Nyla who grew up in South Florida, and her parents have told her that she can major in whatever she wants to major when she grows up. She can cut her hair how she wants, but they're picking her husband for her. And when she begins to question this and falls in love with somebody on her own, her parents decide that they need to take her overseas for her to figure out who she truly is. And when she gets there, she realizes that they are planning for her to not come back and that they've arranged a marriage for her. And the story follows that journey. I came to that story, honestly, making sense of my own life because I had friends who this had happened to. It was not as extreme as in the book, but there were situations where I had a few friends who were pressured into getting married to people that they didn't want to get married to at very young ages, 18, 19. Mm-hmm. And I was there with them as they went through that journey. And it was really difficult to see, not only because of what was happening, but because these were my childhood friends. I'd known them since I was 3-4 years old. And I not only knew them, I knew their parents. Mm. And I knew that their parents loved them. Mm-hmm. As awful as what they were doing was, I knew that they loved them. And so it was hard for me to wrap my mind around, why would you do this to somebody that you love? And so this story, I began writing it to make sense of that question, to answer that question. Why do people do these things to the people that they love? And why do people stay in these situations? How do people leave? It was a very personal book in that regard.
I'm curious about the reaction that you've received to that book, people who have read it and then let you know what impact it has made on their lives.
It's been an interesting experience with Written in the Stars. To be honest, as I was approaching publication of the book, I began to grow nervous because I realized that I have written a true story that happens, but it's also a story about a forced marriage. And it's a story that takes place in Pakistan. Mm-hmm. So there is this chance that people will read this and just generalize about the whole country based on this story. Sure. And I did think about that a lot. And I thought about that a lot while I wrote the book. It's why it took me almost 10 years to write the book, because it was a question that weighed on my mind really heavily. I spoke with an editor friend of mine who's Muslim, and I was telling her about this. And I said, I'm worried. And she said, when we're confronted with the stories that we're going to tell and what we're going to say, justice should always be what takes precedence over the fear of what others may generalize. Justice needs to take the precedence. Wow. It is the truth. And so I took that to heart. And because I spent so many years walking that tightrope, okay, I need to make sure that nobody comes away from this thinking this is a Muslim thing, or right. all Pakistanis are like this. And so there was a lot of nuance that had to be woven in. I am very grateful that the reception was great. And the reception went beyond just the South Asian community. When the book was first announced as a book deal, the first email I got was from a woman who was Mormon, and she ran a shelter for women that were running away from forced marriages in their community. And she emailed me and said, "Where can I get this book?" So it's not a situation that only affects
sure.
one particular faith or one particular race. And I learned that more and more through the publication of the book, through the reception of the book, and through the people that reached out to me. I saw how far spread the issue was, and it made me grateful that I wrote the book, because it was reaching some children. I heard back from one teen who said, "I read this book and I realized my parents are going to do this to me. Mm-hmm. I realized some of the signs, some of the clues, and now I'm worried." And that meant a lot to me, to know that maybe this might stop somebody.
Aisha Saeed on AIJcast. We'll be back with more of our conversation in just a moment, but first, a quick word. As always, I encourage you to visit the AIJcast website, AIJcast.com, and it's there that you'll find all of the information about our artists, including their news, events, and products. And at this time of year around the holidays, if you are looking for a gift with meaning, I encourage you to visit the shop section of our website. You'll find links to a lot of our artist products there, including Aisha Saeed's books. And if you want to look good, or help the one that you love look good, and also support something that you love, we have a lot of AIJcast products, including the very fashionable AIJ hoodie. You can find all of this and so much more on our website, AIJcast.com. And now, back to more of our conversation with Aisha Saeed. Very, very personal stories end up resonating way beyond what they quote unquote should.
There's an author, Jacqueline Woodson, whose work I absolutely adore. She writes for children and adults. And I heard her speak once and she said, "Specificity is the key to universality."
Yeah, it really is. Why is that?
I think because specificity draws you into a story. I tell this to students all the time when we're working on storytelling and creating characters, that you're not going to care about a character if you don't know them and if you don't feel with them. And the way that you feel for a character and get a sense of place and time is by specificity. You can't just say they like football. What team do they like? Mm-hmm. They like tea? What kind of tea? You need to know these things so you can feel like you're in their shoes. So I think that specificity helps you connect with the character. And then from there, those universal feelings that they're feeling, you also begin to connect with in a deeper way because you care about that character.
I think that's absolutely right. I also wonder if it has something to do with the authenticity of the storyteller or the musician, that they're telling something that they actually care a great deal about. It's something that they are an expert about. If it's that deeply authentically true, that has more power to reach someone.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Let's talk about your book, Amal Unbound, which came out in 2018. Tell me about that story, about the origin of it, and give us an overview of the book.
So Amal Unbound is a middle grade story. So it's for third grade and up, although adults have read it too. It's open for everybody. Amal Unbound is a story about 12-year-old Amal who's growing up in a village in Pakistan. And her life is pretty ordinary. She loves to read. She loves poetry. She wants to be a teacher when she grows up. But everything is upended one day when she has an encounter with a man in her neighborhood who is the landlord who rules their village, unbeknownst to her. And by upsetting him, he decides as punishment, she will be a servant in his home. And the story follows Amal's life as an indentured servant and what she must do to survive that situation and what she might be able to do if she's brave enough to overcome that situation.
What inspired that story?
After I wrote Written in the Stars, I was thinking about the next story that I might want to tell. And I actually began writing this before Written in the Stars sold. And I was noodling on a story set entirely in Pakistan because I am of Pakistani ancestry, and I wanted to set a story for children in Pakistan because I felt like there weren't, at least at that time, not many books set in Pakistan for children. And I felt like when I would go on school visits and talk about Written in the Stars, so many kids would tell me the stereotypes they had of Pakistan. And I had such a different vision of Pakistan because it was my ancestral homeland. I grew up on my grandfather's sugarcane fields and running through the orange groves and having chai in the courtyard. And so I had just these wonderful memories. And I wanted to bring that to young readers who may never travel to Pakistan, who may never see these places, to be able to experience what that was like. So I knew I wanted to set it in Pakistan. And I set it in my parents' ancestral village because it was where I had my fondest memories as a child.
Back to specificity again, right?
Yes. What we know. Yes. Yeah. And I chose this story about this 12-year-old girl named Amal and her hardship after I read an article on Malala. And around that time, Malala's story was just unfolding. We were just learning about it as a nation, as a world. And I was watching the conversation around it, how she'd spoken up, truth to power, how she had been shot, how she almost died, and how she continued to speak out despite all these risks. And I was really moved by what she had done.
Sure. Yeah.
But one thing that always made me think a little bit was when people would say, oh, we need more like her. Pakistan needs more people like that out there. And even Malala herself has said, I am just one girl of many, many others. And this focus on her, in some ways, it made her this unique anomaly in Pakistan when she wasn't. And so I thought, okay, well, maybe I want to write a story set in Pakistan about a girl who will never be famous, who's never going to be known for her bravery, but what she does matters. And what she did for her community in this story is ultimately going to matter. So I wanted to write a story about bravery, everyday, ordinary bravery, and the way it can ripple out.
I love what you're saying. It reminds me of the comment that drives me crazy when I hear people say, I just wish that that fill in the blank liberation movement had a Martin Luther King. And first of all, they all do. Second of all, Martin Luther King marching by himself, giving great speeches without the millions of people that rallied around and behind and beside and pushed back and pushed him further would not have accomplished what he accomplished. I saw that through my time living in Palestine. There were, I mean, taxi drivers who just persisted in getting between cities, even when there was a military blockade, not for any other reason than to help people get from one place to another and to earn a few shekels to help support their families. And that persistence, that just rugged persistence of living day to day in oppressive situations and holding on to principles in a way that you may never get fame, but you will continue to exist. I love that, just resonates so strongly with me, and I appreciate you for sharing that.
And I think Amal Unbound, when I was writing the story and I was telling librarians about it, I had gotten some feedback that, well, you know, kids, they don't really like to read stories about characters that are living in another country because they can't relate to them. And so I was getting that quite a lot from people, and I was a little discouraged because the story took a lot of my heart and a lot of time to write. And I thought, okay, so I'm going to write a story and no one's going to be able to connect with it. But I, you know, I can't speak to how or why it resonated so strongly. It is my most popular book so far. But I believe it's because it came out in 2018 during a Trump presidency where a lot of people were afraid, stressed out, terrified, and feeling like their small actions couldn't make a difference.
Sure.
And this book is all about standing up, speaking truth to power, even if you don't get that recognition, that it still matters. And I think, I mean, I can never know for sure, but I wonder if that is part of what connected with so many people.
Mm. And I know that that book has been part of a whole series for you in terms of connecting with school children and Global Read Along Day and the like. So that's exciting to me that schools and children are responding to that in such incredible ways. So
yeah. And it's again, an example of the specificity and the universality conversation, because I did a school visit and one of the girls, she was a white girl from Wisconsin, and she raised her hand and she said, "I am Amal." And I said, "Really?" And she said, "Yeah, because you know how Amal was taken away from her family and she couldn't see them? Well, my mom was taken away from me and I'm in a foster home now. And I want to see my mom every day and I can't. And my mom wants to see me and she can't." And it just, you know, this story is such a different story from hers. And yet she connected with that very painful emotion of wanting your parents.
Wow. Wow. Let's talk about Bilal Cook's Doll, which came out last year, 2019. So tell us about this book.
So Bilal Cook's Doll is my first picture book, and it's a story about a little boy named Bilal who loves to cook lentils with his dad, Chana Dal, that particular yellow lentil, in the slow cooker. And so the story is about the joy of cooking, and it's the joy of friendship, and it's about the importance of waiting, because they cook it in a slow cooker and they have to wait all day. And waiting can be a little challenging for young people, maybe all people. And so the story is about how food connects communities and about the beauty of waiting for certain things.
And part of what I've read about the book is also it's about Bilal's own uncertainty with, this is food I love, but are they going to love it as much as I do?
Yeah. Yeah. Which is, I think, a feeling so many can relate to, especially people who sometimes bring food into classrooms that don't look like everybody else's food. And although I think from my school travel experiences, I feel like that's changing and it's not the way it was when I was growing up. And that's why in Bilal Cook's Doll, though there is that uncertainty, it's not cruel. It's not bullying. It's just a, you know, the other children are kind of like, is that going to be good? But it doesn't get darker than that. I mean, that's been a really cool part about, I didn't realize Amal and Bound had so much food in it, actually, until I started doing school visits. And one of the activities that the teachers all did, like I'd say 70% of the schools I visited, they would make the food from the book.
Even though
there's no recipe in Amal and Bound, they would look it up, they would make it. And so that was really neat to see, again, kids in Wisconsin, kids in Minnesota, like eating food from a village in Pakistan. That was really
That's
neat.
Amazing. Aisha Saeed on AIJcast. You can connect with her online through her website, aishasaeed.com. That's AISHASAEED.com. On our next episode, part two of our conversation with Aisha Saeed. AIJcast is made possible through the support of listeners like you. We can only do what we do because of your support. So please do take just a moment and go to our website, AIJcast.com, and click on the link that says support. And we love to interact with you on social media. We are there on a multitude of platforms where our handle is unsurprisingly AIJcast. Our theme music comes from our house band Marred Fame. And we are engineered, mixed, and produced by the somewhat aimless Al Mudeef. Al was so inspired by our conversation with Aisha that he has written his own short story about an anthropomorphized collection of retail shops.
I am Amal.
And I'm your host, Marthame Sanders, encouraging you to go, rather stay put, create some beauty of your own, and remember that the world isn't truly beautiful until it's beautiful for all. Justice and peace!